This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Police union pop crew, police and prisons, civil rights union has rejected a proposed 4.7 wage increase. And the union says the increase, which it also rejected in 2023, you will understand if you look at the historical context of all of this, for all intents and purposes, all of these issues would have started in and around 2018. But here, according to the union, the increases, which they also rejected in 2023, never signed, falls far below inflation, which currently sits at 5.6%. Richard Mamabolo, Pop Crew spokesperson, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. How are you?
Good evening to you and the listeners.
Thank you for coming on board, Richard. Richard, question, right? I'm just checking, Richard, right?
Yes.
Trademark. Have you got it covered, Chief?
I couldn't get it.
The trademark. Have you got it covered?
Which trademark is that?
Pop Crew trademark. I see people are defending their trademarks and their logos in courts. Have you got yours covered?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Long secured.
Long secured.
You will never have such issues. Never.
So if I brought that particular hand holding that particular flame and I just changed the logo at the bottom where it says Justice for All and I said something differently, you would come for me. You'd say, Chief, hey, that's our logo.
So long as it's not a red flame, we wouldn't bother.
I like that, Richard. Richard, let's start with the conversation at hand. Richard, would I be fair to say your issues started in 2018, not in 2024 or 2023? Your real issues here, where I look at the history of this particular aspect as well, would have started in about 2018.
That is quite correct. Remember that back in 2018, this was just after the fifth administration. Then we were entering into the sixth administration with the current president taking over government. Now, towards the end of the fifth administration, just towards the tail end, there were certain agreements which were obviously signed through collective bargaining processes.
Yeah.
Now, when the administration came in, of course, there was also a change in leadership in terms of ministers in unions and, of course, bargaining processes as well. Mm. So that is where the challenge really started, because it was for the first time when we had an incident wherein, after having signed an agreement, it was implemented into, there were three legs into the agreement.
Yeah.
The first leg was implemented, the second was implemented, and then government...
It was the last leg.
The government decided to renege on the last leg. Now, that has been an issue of contention since then, and as you would obviously know, that since that time, there were a lot of challenges. We understood very well that our economy faced hardships, and as we were dealing with some of the challenges, there were obviously... wage freezes. There was a huge debate about public service expenditure, which was considered to be very high, and so the finance ministry under Tombweni started implementing measures which were not in line with the commitments that the president, the president Cyril Ramaphosa had made in the State of the Nation address. So that was where the trajectory started, and. Since then, of course, things have not been going well for unions. I think it was quite clear from the onset that there was a regret by some individuals in government, especially the finance minister, and they wanted to reverse all the gains that had obviously protected workers, which were hard won since the 1994 dispensation.
Just explain to me, Richard. You know, can one in essence of these particular, you know, negotiations and signage or no signage of certain wage agreements as well, because there's also that particular aspect, some signed, some didn't sign, and all of those. So it's simple when you look at it maybe on the surface, but it's complex just below that particular surface, because in 2018, it was the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, the PSCBC resolution agreement that would have, you know, started this particular ball rolling. And then I think in 2020, government reneged, right, on the third leg of that particular agreement. How far back can one go? And this is just a generalized question to you now. How far back can you go and you can, you know, reference back to 2018? Yes, I suppose you can talk about, you know, wage negotiations today and say, based on the last 5 years of freezing, you know, increments, based on what happened during COVID, based on the reneging of that particular third leg, based on the fact that we didn't sign. How important within an agreement and a negotiation process are all of those particular details when you're actually looking at the year and the now and you're trying to get to a figure that speaks to the year and the now?
Okay, just to take you back a bit, you remember that the PSCBC, it represents all public servants.
Yeah.
And under our union, which is POPCU, within the criminal justice cluster, so we also have other bargaining councils there. In, you know, we've got the safety and security sectoral bargaining councils with deals with security. So you've got different other unions under different mandates, having different other bargaining councils.
Yeah.
So this is the main one. The PSCBC is the main one because it speaks to all of us. Now there have also as well been challenges within this other bargaining councils. So I would speak more about the ones within the criminal justice cluster, for example.
Mm.
So as far back, even before I was even at POPCU, you know, there have been circles of agreements having been signed and agreed upon, yet not having been implemented. For example, you look at the danger allowance, for example, which is a contentious issue.
Mm.
There was an agreement signed as far back as 2001 to say that it would obviously be increased on an annual basis in line with the consumer price index. At the time, it was 400.
Yeah.
Now, it was only increased just last year, end of last year, to 700. But according to the agreement, which of course considers the consumer price index, it was supposed to be standing currently at least over 1,500.
Which then makes my question, I think, you know, more relevant than in an instance where you've given me even a better example of the danger allowance in 2001. So how, you know, how far back can you go to begin to deal with historical context to an engagement you're having at the present moment? I think your example even speaks more to the question I was asking.
Yeah, these are multiplicities of challenges that have been brewing over the years. And of course, I think with this one, because this is the main bargaining platform for all unions, that is why perhaps it has obviously been a contentious issue, because it affects everyone. And I think, like I said, there would obviously be different other challenges in other sectors as well. But the main thing is that, you know, having had the Labor Relations Act adopted in 1996, and of course having made some gains with relation to how employees, government employees, are to be compensated, not only by the way, including in the private sector as well. I mean, the mining sector as well, and all these other sectors.
Mm.
The point of the matter is that since that time, since 2020, since that renaissance of the agreement of 2018 started, we have seen a pattern wherein it was quite clear that they are trying to erode the powers of unions. And that means basically that if you do not have bargaining councils, collective bargaining is no longer there or is no longer taken seriously. It essentially means that the relevance of unions is not there anymore. And that is where we're going. So our rejection of this specific 4.7% as well emanates initially from the trend that we've been seeing over the past 5 years.
Mm.
Remember as well that even in the past 5 years there have been wage freezes since the time of when Tumbo Wini was still the Minister of Finance.
Mm.
Wage freezes were introduced, and I think one of the principles we held since then was that, you know, we know that, of course, negotiations are we have to give certain things, we have to give, and we have to obviously accept certain things.
Mm.
Now, it was becoming clear that But there were areas which we could not compromise on. For example, the issue around the accepting anything below the inflation rate, because it doesn't make sense.
Mm.
As things stand, we've got they're giving public servants 4.7%, and yet the inflation rate is standing at 5.6%.
Mm.
So it means there's an area which is lacking, which basically means that workers will not necessarily benefit anything out of this, because you know, since COVID-19, we've been having a lot of challenges around the rising cost of living. Many of our members within the public service cannot afford bonded houses,
mm.
and yet they do not qualify for RDP houses. You know,
mm.
So there are a variety of challenges. And just last year alone, you had the Ministry of Finance again introducing cost containment measures under the guise of austerity measures. And that, of course, has meant that we've got a decline in public service.
Mm.
It means that there are vacant funded posts which are not being filled by government because they're trying to contain the measures. They put into effect these measures. That then means there will be lack of service for communities, hospitals, mm. Lesser nurses, lesser police, and all these other public servants. And again, I think I think this is quite important as well. You know, with the police, of course, there's been an outcry about the rising levels of crime in the country
mm.
now. Government decided that they will obviously increase the number of police officers. In fact, in his maiden State of the Nation address, I remember very well, the president had said that we're going to have violent crimes within the next decade, in a period of 10 years. Now, immediately after saying that, you had the Minister of Finance cutting the SAPS budget. So, mm. so where we stand now is we're in an era where, you know, last year they just recruited, 10,000 police officers into the service.
Mm.
But in real fact, in actual fact, you also had members of the SAPS leaving the service due to natural attrition, some resigning, early resignations, you know, all these things. So you had about 7,000 members leaving the service, while you've got 10,000 coming in. So in real sense, you've got about, you only had about 3,000.
3,000.
Yeah, which are lesser than what the Premier of Gauteng has done through this crime wardens, because he's got more numbers actually in that regard. And of course, I think due to the issues around promotions of members, a member of the SAPS would take over 10 years from moving from a rank of a constable, the most junior, to the next rank, you know. So there are a lot of frustrations. Police are being killed on a daily basis. So all these dynamics, of course, have got a role to play in the kind of challenges that our members are facing. So 4.7% will not satisfy any need. In fact, some of the well-trained, where the SAPS has invested a lot of resources, some of these guys who are detectives are moving into the private sector in huge numbers as we speak. So the skills that have been invested in them to actually ensure that we fulfill the constitutional mandate of keeping South Africans safe is actually going into it. It's actually benefiting the private sector as we speak.
Mm.
So those are the dynamics that we're currently dealing with. And we think that with this, of course, there'll be other challenges which face nurses, which are different, which I cannot speak about. But we feel that the lives of these members are not improving at all.
So in essence, the category we're talking about, Richard, is what? Police, traffic, and correctional services when we look at Pop Crew, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and the sort of numbers of individuals we're talking about. My last check was around 120,000 to 130,000 people. What are your numbers?
You mean our membership?
Yeah,
our membership.
Yeah, membership.
Around 160,000.
160 now.
160,000. Yes.
Sure. So we're talking police, traffic, and correctional, and about 160,000 individuals. So, you know, I get that, you know, in last year, right, 2023, there would have been that signing of that and that agreement and the public sector wage agreement. And it guaranteed an inflation linked increase in the 2024-25. And the number being proposed is 4.7. You're looking at a 5.6. The other argument that's being made is if you look at inflation over an average of this particular year, throughout the year, because inflation moves. In February, it was 5.6. But on average, throughout the year of 2024, it will be 4.5, 4.7, more or less, on average. But you're not looking at that. You're looking at what was it in February, what was the number, and it was 5.6, and that's the number you're engaging on. Let's ask the question. You're suggesting you were hard done by previously. There is an agreement that says guaranteeing an inflation-linked increase. That's not being done this particular way because 4.7 falls below that anyway. So, you know, that's breaking of that particular agreement as well. We could go back and note all the other times those particular agreements were broken when they said, you know, there's just no particular money. And we can go back into that historical context. What happens and what are the options then? Because I've seen that, one, you're talking about a march, you're also talking about downing tools. What are the real consequences here that you are contemplating?
Yeah, look, just to maybe clarify one other point. Remember that we went for negotiations last year within the very same PSCBC. There was we reached a deadlock, and there were dispute resolutions meeting called to actually quell the challenge because we could not find each other with the employer. Now, since then, the employer then decided to take a unilateral decision. So the agreement that was signed last year was something which was done unilaterally by the employer without necessarily going through the processes of the normal processes of collective bargaining. That is why we're saying that it is definitely under threat. And I think one of the things you remember.
Would you then also say, Richard, that this also then is a process of unilateral decision making on their behalf because you've been given a number and it's not quite the number you want and it's being enforced on the 1st of April?
Well, this time around, there's a difference this time around because remember that we might have a view as an individual union.
Yeah.
There are also other unions within this bargaining council. Some of them are affiliated to COSATU, some are not. Now, so how it works is that as and when we make certain demands, whatever the majority decides, you know, it's a majority rule, basically 50% plus one. Then whatever majority decides, then they go through with it. So this time around, it did not work in our favor because some of the unions work together with some which are within COSATU as well, driving a different mandate. That is how they got this agreement to be signed. Now, and again, I think this goes both ways because in certain instances, we would, when we of course in majority, we would fight for certain privileges and privileges. And when we win them, irregardless of whether the other unions would not have necessarily participated satisfactorily, but all members are going to benefit from that. So similar in this instance, just that it's the other way around. We were disputing, for example, the 4.7%, yet some unions signed it. And because they are in majority in terms of the numbers, that is why it was agreed upon. And I think this is one of the strategies that is
the PSA, used. For example, has welcomed the 4.7.
PSA always welcomes everything. they do not necessarily have numbers, but because they are working with some unions from within COSATU, you see, so I think to an extent, the divisions within our block as COSATU have also resulted in this, some of these decisions being taken because under normal circumstances, we would obviously sit together, understanding each other and, of course, agree on one common purpose and ensure that we do that. So this time around, things are a bit different. So those are some of the challenges. But regardless of that, you see, we cannot say that because a majority decision has been made and then therefore we're just going to keep quiet about it. That is why we're so adamant that even in 2022, we had a national march to the union buildings wherein we submitted a mandate specifically focusing on the criminal justice cluster matters. And since then, the demands we've made have not necessarily been addressed up to so far, you know. And there has not been any formal response. But we must say that I think, within our sector, of course, we are making good progress. We think For example, the change of leadership in the Department of Correctional Service has been actually better because I think on some long-term issues, we do agree with both the minister and the national commissioner in that regard, and of course in the SAPS as well. But there are also other fundamental challenges that we do face. Some of the challenges, of course, we understand that even if we do overcome them, at the end of the day, you'll be told that Treasury does not have the funds. They simply does not have the funds to implement such programs. So that is the challenge we are facing.
So then what are your options? I mean, yes, march to Pretoria again, and then what? What are your options then?
Yeah, look, I think you would know that any form of demonstration would be a last resort. We prefer resolving things through our challenges through the boardrooms. But again, we are also a worker-led union. So members are frustrated and they feel that they've been undermined yet again. I think the very fact that, you know, certain things can be tolerated, but the fact that for the past 5 years, salaries were frozen. Salaries of public servants were frozen while the cost of living was on the rise on an annual basis. It's the pressing matter which definitely needs to be addressed. And our members feel that this cannot happen. Fortunately for us, we were anyway planning on having, we just come from our Congress in November, National Congress. So we are having provincial congresses coming up and different other activities just to ensure that they understand the mandate of Congress and, of course, define a path for the next 4 years. So this platform will also be used to engage members around this matter as to what needs to happen. But the general view that is coming out clearly is that, no, we're not going to tolerate this. Something must be done. And, of course, our mandate comes from the very same members because they are the ones who, of course, are pop crew after all. So what we will be seeking is a mandate, and then we will be taking it further from then on. I think our president also mentioned, you know, I think one of the things that perhaps has blinded a lot of people is the fact that perhaps people think that we do not understand or appreciate the current political dynamics. You know, we know that the elections are coming next year, just in fact about 64 days from now, the national elections. So some people would perhaps think, but why are these ones of pop crew not being politically correct? You know,
We thought they were comrades.
No, we can't do that because I think there's one thing after elections. Then what do we tell our members? You know, what do we tell our members about what they want and what they have not gotten? So as much as we understand the dynamics, political dynamics in the country, we are fully and purely for our members first. Our members come first. Our members are a priority. And whatever gains we made, of course, should be in their best interest. So that is the bottom line about that matter.
Sure.
And of course, I think the other thing, of course, is quite clear that there is no other political party. I mean, manifestos are circulating everywhere currently. There's no other political organization that has shown to have the best interest of workers at heart, you know. So we find ourselves in a very difficult position, really. The least we can do is to defend the gains that we have made in this past 30 years.
You know, you've pointed out, I think, quite eloquently, Richard, and I've pointed it out to you as well, that we've been down this road here before. We've gone back to 2018 and we've worked 2022. We've spoken about the signed agreement in 2023. We've spoken about the march in 2022. We've spoken about, you know, all of the various phases of the first phase, the second phase, and the third phase, reneging on the third phase. But in essence, like you've also just pointed out and illustrated, is that we've been down this road before. Those who would have signed previously agreements of these particular nature would have been SATU, PSA, NAPTOSA, HOSPERSA would have also signed. Those who did not sign would have included yourself, Denosa, SAPU, and NEHAU, and others would have accepted. A lot of others are accepting this 4.7 again. Same split again. Different people, you know, will accept. So what does it leave you with at the end of the day? Whether you sign or whether you don't sign, people are going to sign, majority is going to win. So it doesn't really matter. You. It seems like you're just walking a path that you've walked before.
Yeah, you see, COSATU has got this campaign called One Sector, One Union. You know, it's about basically uniting unions. And I think just last year, if you remember when we had disputes last year, in this very same PSCBC, you know, we saw all unions from all fronts, even PSA, Pop Crew, all of them working together from the Vavi Union, SAFTU, all these federations working together, because what we appreciate is that despite our whatever political differences we have, at the end of the day, we're fighting for one thing, and that thing affects all of us. So at some point, unions should mature to that level wherein, you know, despite whatever personality differences we might have, we must all agree that our prime interest here is to ensure that the interests of members are served. And through doing that, I think in one way or another, we'll have to find each other. But unfortunately, you have some unions, of course, which when the going gets rough, they decide to jump ship, you know. With the one you mentioned, starting with a P or a PSA or something like that.
Yeah, PSA.
I mean, there are those tendencies wherein, for them, it's more about, you know, cheap goal scoring, wherein, before they're always the first to jump ship, and such trends, of course, have been generally acceptable, because we understand that, of course, we come from a different background, we come from a different federation, and you cannot necessarily hold them at gunpoint. But in most cases, you would always have those unions which would jump ship through whatever measures, and that is the current problem now. If we are not to deal away with that, really. And that is it's a unison that's got nothing to do with maybe perhaps external matters, but it's more about how we actually engage with each other. It's a union dynamics in their own have got challenges. So if we are not to address that, then we'll still be having similar trends wherein certain unions get manipulated into agreeing to certain things that might not necessarily be in the best interest of everyone.
Sure. Richard, I'm going to take Tebogo, who's been listening in on the conversation. Tebogo?
Yes, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Chief. How are you, bro?
I'm good. Can I just say a word? Ne?
Sure, bro.
With my brother on the other side. Ne?
Richard.
Yeah, Richard. But I'm Richard. Ne? You know your problem is what? Ne? And with most, you're politicizing everything. Ne? In which sense, you know what, you need to be straight, an open bar.
An open bar?
Yeah, open bar.
Tebogo, I'm going to leave it there. Richard, I suppose, Richard, you were speaking to the fine line, you know, of politicizing and not politicizing, when it's you know, comfortable to do something and when it's not comfortable to do something. There is an election, like you said, 29th of May. We do understand there are affiliations to, you know, groupings and interests of, you know, who is in that political space and who to support and not support, and even Pop Crew, you know, is in that particular space, and you know, the stance that you would have taken might be seen to be one that is not maybe, you know, or maybe is frowned upon from those who are fighting an election. But you've pointed out, I think, to the question that it's firstly about the membership and then it's about the political affiliations.
Yeah, look, we like I said, we come from a Congress last year, just towards the end of last year. And we obviously did speak about what we're going to endorse, and COSATU has also as well come out clearly on that matter. Again, like I'm saying, you see, either way, we're not trying to necessarily politicize everything. I think our main priority as unions is, of course, to take care of the interests of our members. And that is the primary objective, really. Any other thing comes secondary. We will obviously not keep quiet when certain things are happening which we're not happy about. But again, on the flip side, you also have the same problem that, you know, some of the people who are going for elections or some of the organizations going for these elections, of course, have got absolutely nothing to offer workers. In fact, you go to the Western Cape, for example, where certain organizations are leading, you would see how workers are treated. You could just get a picture from what is happening with workers in that province as to what is likely going to be the case with public servants in the whole country if the ANC were to lose power. And that, of course, does not say that, of course, they are in the clear. Of course, there have been a lot of challenges. And, of course, they should obviously be confronted whenever such challenges do occur.
So let's look ahead. Let's look ahead, Richard, and talk about we've been talking about what's been in the past and what you're doing about that. Just help me out here if I'm on the correct path. Your wage talks for 25-26 would start in September. Am I right?
Sorry, I couldn't get that.
Your wage talks for 25-26, do they start in September?
I do not have the actual date at the moment.
Okay. Sure, but I mean, because this is the one tranche of a 3-year period. You'd have to now begin to have a new process of wage, you know, negotiations, looking at the period ahead. You know, have you even started, you know, looking at what kind of numbers and or what that kind of picture looks like for wage talks in the future, or are you totally focused on having this resolved first before you even begin to look at the 25-26 and the way ahead?
Well, obviously we are concerned about what is happening now, what has been happening now, and what has not happened. But as well, clearly we definitely be looking into the future because we want to avoid certain things that we would not have been happy with in the past and in the present. Those are engagements which are ongoing, of course, and we'll obviously be making assessments of those. Last year, by the way, just to remind you, when there were these negotiations, they entered into a multi-term agreement, meaning that an agreement for a period of 2 years. One of the debates, of course, which was there was that, okay, perhaps this should be the last time entering into that.
You know what, Richard, I was about to ask you that. I was about to ask you whether you had learnt your lesson in essence to negotiations that go over periods of 2 to 3 years, because what you have learnt over the last 3 years is that it might start out well, but there could be a reneging on an aspect and or a particular number within that particular period. Does negotiating year on year not maybe solve that particular problem, because you're then in control of the number that you ultimately either put forward and or then get?
Yeah, look, sometimes such decisions, of course, are informed by the conditions at the time. And sometimes, well, maybe they would have had their both positive aspects and negative aspects. But of course, learning from the recent lessons, it clearly shows that sometimes they tend not to be reliable, because some of these agreements which are multi-term are not fully implemented. So of course, there is that consideration to say perhaps we should consider having annual agreements as opposed to multi-term agreements. So those are some of the debates that I think perhaps, of course, through unions engaging themselves and, of course, working more together, which is what we really want, would perhaps come to an agreement of that nature. So the unity of unions is quite important.
Richard Mamabolo, I'm going to say thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective. It's been a pleasure. And as you begin to engage and go further down this road, we'll also then call you up later and just ask, you know, where you're standing, and if there's an agreement or not, we'll engage the conversation at that particular time. Thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective, onto Power 98.7. It's appreciated.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.